This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and do we have a jam-packed show for you this weekend. Not only is Leibel Sternbach here with finance information, Joe McKenzie stops by sharing career advice with you, Cassie Crandall on lifestyle, State Director for AARP Minnesota, Kathy McClear, joins us as well. Also, we give you a health update looking at COVID-19. This week's Words to the Wise and our National Day, plus much, much more, as New Beginnings starts right now.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi again, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and with me right now is Kathy McClear, State Director for AARP Minnesota. I just have to ask you, we're about out of the summertime, and I hate saying that, but what's your favorite thing to do in the summer, no matter what year, no matter what time? You have to do it every summer.
Oh, I gotta go boating on the Mississippi River.
Boating on the Mississippi?
On the Mississippi.
Motorized or paddled?
Motorized, although paddle gets a little more exercise and, you know, a little more scenic, but typically I do motorized boating.
So a lot of exercise, and, you know, that's apropos for what we want to talk about today. There's a new outdoor fitness park in St. Paul at the Hallie Q. Brown Community Center, and AARP is the sponsor behind it. You're the force behind it.
Yeah, so when AARP celebrated our 60th anniversary back in 2018, we launched a really ambitious effort to create 53 fitness parks, so one in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. And the one that we get in Minnesota is right here in St. Paul at the Hallie Q. Brown Community Center. And this is really a way to highlight the work that we've done to make our community stronger, make them more livable for all ages, foster healthy habits and address health disparities, and just really create public spaces that can be enjoyed by anyone of any age. And so we're really proud of this effort, and we're really proud to have one right here in St. Paul.
So when you go to the Hallie Q. Brown Center to take advantage of the exercise equipment, do you have to register? What's involved?
No, that's the beauty of this, Freddie, is that anybody in the neighborhood, anyone from the community can come any time of day, whenever they feel inclined to utilize that fitness equipment. And it's similar to fitness equipment that you might find in a really expensive, private gym. But these are all outdoors, and it has instructions right there on how to use the equipment. Folks can go any time of day. We do also have a contract to provide led group fitness classes led by a fitness instructor. And all of those classes are free to attend and led by certified fitness professionals. And we just, wanted an opportunity for folks, no matter who you are or where you live or what your income level is, to be able to really focus on your fitness and take some steps to lead a healthier life.
You have a grand opening planned as well.
We do. We're so excited about this. So August 17th, we will be at Hallie Q. Brown from noon to 2 p.m. We're going to have a couple of food trucks. We're going to have giveaways. We're going to have some music and give people a chance to just come take a spin on some of those pieces of fitness equipment, meet with one of the fitness instructors to learn how to use those pieces of equipment, and just get a better sense of where it's at and see that addition to the community. And we're so proud of it.
This is so apropos. There was just a story just a few days ago that says that just a few minutes each day of exercise really can turn the tide in a person's health. Is this in alignment with that? And what do you say to people who are just wondering whether or not they should get off the couch, Kathy McClear?
Yeah, and you're so right, Freddie. I mean, just a few minutes a day, whether it's just taking a walk around the block or, I refer to it as functional fitness. So as we age, keeping that strength up and keeping our muscles strong so we can climb stairs and take walks and lift the groceries is so important. And having access to this type of fitness equipment where you don't have to pay anything, and yeah, it might be a little challenging to use the equipment when it's a few inches of snow outside, but hopefully folks will come and give it a try and really learn to love, adding some fitness into their life, because it is so important.
So exciting. This is in collaboration with the national nonprofit FitLot, AARP Minnesota, working with the local Parks and Recreation Department and Hallie Q. Brown. A lot of people have come together to make this happen. Do you have a final thought for our Twin Cities audience this morning?
Yeah, one thing I'd love to share is that the company that built the FitLot, that makes all the equipment, is located out in Delano. So it's not just good for the community, it's also a local business that had a stake in that. And if folks want more information about where they can find the FitLot or where they can take classes, they can visit aarp.org/mn.
Well said. That's Kathy McCleard, State Director for AARP Minnesota. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Freddie.
And this is New Beginnings. With us now is Joe McKenzie. We've deemed him our career expert. He turns candidates into contenders through his company called Ripple Connects. Joe McKenzie, why did you start Ripple Connects and what was the thrust behind it?
Great question, Freddie. It was because I saw myself in a volunteer capacity helping people in career transition, meeting more and more people, and they were coming to me. Hey, how did you do that? Tell me a little bit more about that hidden job market. Tell me more about how you frame some of those interview questions or answers when you were speaking to our group. And it was really just kind of an organic process that I saw people come to me, and I formalized it by incorporating Ripple Connects over 10 years ago.
Well, and still going strong. If you'd like some more information about Ripple Connects and the services of Joe McKenzie, 763-438-1621. And it's really easy just to visit Ripple Connects. Today we want to talk about the silent job search. And the title is really a misnomer. A silent job search, in my opinion, Joe McKenzie, and we'll see where we go with this. That's not really a good thing, is it?
No. Many people try it, though. They don't let anybody that they know that loves them or trusts in them or believes in them or has worked with them. They go it alone. And I know, years ago I tried that, and it's set up for frustration, heartbreak, series of dead ends. And I mean, I can understand trying to make sure that you're being discreet about having a job search, but because you may be currently employed somewhere, you don't want that to get out. But Freddie, if you are applying for jobs and you're the only one that knows what you're looking for, it's a strategy that's bound to more than likely cause you more frustration and heartbreak than if you've pivoted to more of a more focused, nimble, and smarter job search by bringing in some key people.
That's really interesting. So do you think people are just self-sabotaging, or they're just so depressed that they just don't want to go through the rigors of trying to improve their career?
I think there's a lot of different reasons. I think one of them is that they may feel that they jeopardize their employment situation if it gets out there. Maybe they don't know the how-to. Maybe they're on social media websites, but they don't want it to get out there. And it can be as simple as picking up the phone and calling someone that you know and trust that's completely out, maybe you've known for years or outside that industry, that you can confide in, mm-hmm. that you can sit down with. And that's how you avoid that silent job search, is just knowing that there's other people out there that want you to, they want you to get that next opportunity, and they're willing to help as long as you take the steps of letting them know and what they're looking for. But the result can be that more focused, nimble, and smarter job search just by the addition of just a handful of new people, and not new people, but your advocates, Freddie, versus going it completely alone, applying for jobs that you think you want, and then all you get is an email back saying, hey, we selected someone else. And that happens quite a bit. And that's often the result of a job search that someone's going about it alone.
So let's help this silent seeker. How can we break them out of their shell and show them the real value of really going forward? How can they have confidence that a bench of advocates, or maybe just one person, can help them to make the difference in their lives?
Well, if you look at the statistics on many of the jobs that get filled today, were not advertised. That's that hidden job market we've been talking about for years on New Beginnings. And that hidden job market is simply just hidden to that job seeker that's only applying for online jobs that they see. Well, most of the time, those opportunities that are not advertised comes through someone you know. So just the logic right there of just rippling out your job search by including two or three more people, people that you know and trust. They may be in your neighborhood. They may be in your church community. They may be someone you worked with, you know, 10 years ago. Just the addition of two to three more people can help you be more focused on some of the areas that you could go, just, you know, nimble enough to say, hey, your advocate says, do you know that this industry is needing skills like that? Now you can be quicker to identify those opportunities just by having two or three people know what you're looking for, Freddie. And so for someone that's struggling to, okay, how do I move from a silent job search to more of a strategic job search that has a few more people? Just think of two or three people that are on your bench of advocates that you know and trust, and that just start there. Just start there. Keep it simple.
We talked about this about a year ago, and a lot of people are saying, you know, that's me. I'm that silent job searcher. You know, I'm a Minnesotan perhaps, and I just don't want to broadcast the fact that, you know, I'm really trying to find a new opportunity. Why do we hold ourselves back? Why do we stay in that shell, even though we may have a bench of advocates to which we can turn?
I think there's a lot of different situations. One of them could be, well, you feel like, okay, I've got to make a change for one reason or another. You're probably stressing about someone's reaction to, hey, I thought you liked your job. You just started that job. You were good at that job. But that's why the importance of knowing that others can really help energize, can really help stabilize, can really help you have a positive mindset. It is tough to ask for help, and that's essentially what we're doing here. But it's those people that if the tables were turned and that person you're thinking about on your bench of advocates was in need of making a change, more than likely we would be that first person that would show up and say, hey, let's sit down for coffee or let's plan for a phone call. I've got some ideas on your search. So you think about it that way, this reciprocal nature of that person that you're thinking about right now and how you would be there for them, they're going to be there for you. And with that being said, start with two or three. Start with those people that are completely outside your industry that you've collaborated with, that you have friendships with, that you've collaborated with, you've volunteered with. That's where I'd start, Freddie, and just start seeing that little granular move from, you know, hey, I applied for these five jobs, only heard back from three. Now you've got more information from this person, some reinforcement of your transferable skills, reinforcement of who you are as a person and how you kind of mesh into different teams, which is all important for employers today.
It's really interesting. Everyone, we're talking with Joe McKenzie of Ripple Connects about the silent job search. Joe, we're just about out of time. What's your final thought for our listeners this weekend?
Look outside that job search to who you can bring in. And if it's just two or three people that help you avoid that silent job search, you're probably ahead of a lot of people or even some of your past job searches. And it is more pleasant to engage with people and not go it alone. And that is really one of the nicest outcomes of avoiding a silent job search is that you have a job search team surrounding you.
You do some fine work at Ripple Connects, Joe McKenzie.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
And we've got more. Stay right there.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
It's fun being with you this week on New Beginnings, and here are four things you probably didn't know yesterday. It's time to up your IQ. A park in Vancouver, British Columbia is nicknamed Dude Chilling Park because of a sculpture depicting a dude kicking back and chilling. The five space shuttles orbited Earth a combined 20,952 times over 134 flights. Number three, before settling on Amazon.com, Jeff Bezos wanted to name his online bookstore Kadabra, as in abracadabra. His attorney convinced him that this sounded a bit too much like cadaver. And number five, at its peak in 2004, Blockbuster consisted of 9,094 stores and employed approximately 84,300 people worldwide. And did you know that the New York City Department of Sanitation is a hit on TikTok? Yes, the New York City Department of Sanitation has racked up over 45,000 followers on TikTok with googly-eyed posts about alternate side parking, snow plows, and misplaced trash bags. A PSA against illegal dumping set to Mario Kart music went viral with more than 2 million viewers. There's a new transparent coating that can actually get rid of those ugly scratches in your car after just 30 minutes. A team in South Korea says the protective material self-heals using nothing but sunlight. When the material absorbs sunlight, its surface temperature rises as light energy turns into thermal energy. The higher temperature makes it possible for the self-healing to begin through the dissociation and recombination of chemical bonds in the surface polymers. There'll be a test on this later. And if you're looking for a movie this weekend, try Pinocchio on Disney Plus with Tom Hanks. On the lighter side, I'm Freddie Bell.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Now let's turn our attention to your financial health in retirement. And with us is Leibel Sternbach. He is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. Leibel, hello, and welcome back to New Beginnings.
How are you today?
Unbelievable. Thank you so much for asking. And we're having a really interesting discussion, in my opinion, on choosing a financial advisor. And you've listed some really interesting points. And I'm wondering, do you think a financial advisor is necessary for retirees?
So I don't think it's necessary. In fact, I think that we're seeing a big movement away from financial advisors. I think that there are a lot of people who want to do it themselves, can do it by themselves, and in fact feel that they would be better off doing it by themselves, either because financial advisors are expensive or because they know or feel like they're going to be sold a product that they don't need. Having said that, right, having said that there's this movement and that you don't technically need a financial advisor, and I often, you know, counsel people on how to do it themselves, and I think you can do it yourself, there is a very measurable value that a good financial advisor can bring to you. And primarily, the good advice that a financial advisor can bring to you is they've seen lots of situations that you haven't, so they may be able to identify something about what you're going through that you haven't thought about, haven't read about, don't know about, that you can take advantage of. So whether that's saving money on taxes or that's saving money on your investments by not buying or selling at the wrong time, right? That's a huge value that advisors bring. Or it can be emotional support, right? I mean, part of the job of a good financial advisor is to be a therapist. And we're there to help you and support you and coach you and help you feel confident when you don't feel confident about yourself or about life, and help make sure that it's not just, we're not just propping you up with words, but that there's math and science behind it, of that you're fiscally responsible and that you will be okay. And so I think there's a lot of value that an advisor can bring. But at the same time, by no means is it a requirement. You do not have to hire a financial advisor for really anything. Nowadays, you can access everything that you need to online.
Interesting. So that's the pros of hiring a financial advisor. But I know you well enough that there are probably two sides to every coin. Is there a drawback with working with a financial advisor?
There are drawbacks to working with a financial advisor. And I'm going to go back to my hammer analogy. Depending on the type of advisor, and I think that all advisors, to a certain extent, we all suffer from this, is that we see the same situation over and over again. And so we become experts in that particular situation. And we end up using the same tools over and over again to solve problems. even though they may not be the best tool or the right tool for the job. And that can end up, that isn't always the best thing, right? So that is a drawback, is that we may see your situation and, you know, pull out a tool that isn't appropriate to you, or maybe it doesn't even feel appropriate, right? It might be technically the correct tool to use, but for you and your comfort level and what makes you feel safe and warm and fuzzy at night, that is just the wrong thing to do. That is one drawback. Another drawback with working with a financial advisor is that, and this really goes into the type of the personality of what you're working with. You might be looking at your financial advisor as a crutch. And what I tell my clients all the time is I will never make the decision for you. I will help you make the choice. I will help educate you on how to choose, but I will never make the choice for you. And so if you're looking for someone to tell you do X, Y, Z, that's not me, because I firmly believe that the choice needs to be yours. And I might have my instincts and my feelings of one way or the other, but I'm not living your life, right? I can't want this more than you. And I'm not the one who has to live with the consequences. And a lot of financial advisors, they will make the choice for you, right? They fall into that camp, especially newer financial advisors who haven't mastered the art of being a guide. Which is hard. It's not something that everyone is suited to. A lot of financial advisors, and it's very easy to fall into this trap. You come to them and they're like a mechanic and they're like, okay, fix XYZ, right? And they will go and fix XYZ and they won't tell you how they're doing it, why they're doing it, or involve you in the choice. And so the drawback with that is when something goes wrong, or you don't know why, right? And you feel like the advisor let you down and you feel like you were taken advantage of. And there is a lot of opportunity for being taken advantage of that way, because you don't know if the choices being made are correct or not, right? You don't know if you're okay with them. You have no way to double check them. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as drawbacks go, that is something that you as an individual, right? You need to make sure that you have a good relationship with your financial advisor, and that you're hiring the person who's right for you. And whether that means that's an advisor who's doing everything for you or someone who's guiding you, or it just means you're following someone who's has similar beliefs, that's up to you. But you need to know what you're going into with your eyes wide open.
Should you go with a captive advisor or one who has the ability to sell into different instruments?
I've met great advisors on both sides. So if you told me, I met this great advisor, I really love him, he really understands me, he makes me feel safe, right? He educates me about everything that I'm doing, and he will tell me, you know, the product that he's selling me is more expensive than what you can get from someone else, but I want to hire him because I want him taking care of my finances, then go you, right? Pay the extra premium for working with the person who makes you feel safe and comfortable and gives you the confidence in your future. There is nothing wrong with that as long as you know that going in. If on the other hand, the person doesn't tell you that they're captive, or they tell you, oh, my company has the best products, right? And you don't worry about someone else. Don't go shopping for other quotes. Then I would say run for the hills, because either that person's deluded or they're just a salesman in disguise, or not even that disguise. They're just pushing product on you. A good financial advisor will tell you to seek other opinions.
Ah, interesting. We're talking with Leibel Sternbach, and we're talking about selecting a financial advisor. I'm just curious, what are the top two questions that a person who's looking at retirement or just investing anyway, just trying to get into this market and understand it, should be asking a financial advisor no matter what? The top two questions.
The number one question that you want to ask a financial advisor, that you want to get crystal clear from them, is what is your philosophy? And I would phrase it that way, right? What's your philosophy? Don't ask them what do you think is a good investment? Don't ask them, you know, give them it's a vague open-ended question. But what you want to get from the advisor is what is their worldview? Because they're going to start spewing things. They're going to start telling you things. And an advisor who's been around the block a few times, an advisor who has experience, they're going to articulate to you something that isn't based on time, and it's going to be based on values. And they're going to tell you, I don't care, you know, what is the right, you know, what is the best investment or whatever. I'm willing to give up returns, right? They're going to have some kind of spiel that they give you, but it's going to be based on producing and delivering an experience. It's whether that's, you know, creating the retirement that you're looking for. It's going to be about the outcome. It's not going to be about how they get there. So that's question number one, right? What is your philosophy? And you need to be okay with that. And you're looking for that it's not product-based, it's outcome-based.
Okay.
Number two, the other question is, I would ask them, how do I know that I can trust you? It is an extremely difficult question for a financial advisor to answer. A inexperienced financial advisor or someone who is newer to the game and hasn't been asked that question before will get extremely flustered. And you will know right away, right? And it's okay to work with someone who's new and inexperienced as long as you know that going in. Right. As long as you know that, okay, we're going to make mistakes along the way, but I'm okay with that. However, if you don't want somebody who you're going to make mistakes with along the way, and you want somebody who has more experience or more experience with your situation, when you answer that question, they're going to have a very interesting answer, and it's going to be one that's designed to make you feel comfortable. And the way they're going to make you feel comfortable is by making you feel uncomfortable. Right? Because a good financial advisor knows that you shouldn't inherently trust them. And that the fact that you are asking that question means that you are aware, right, that it's a two-way relationship, that it isn't just trust me blindly, right? And that's the relationship you want with your advisor. You want mutual accountability. And a good financial advisor will be able to articulate that. They'll be able to tell you what their credentials are. They'll be able to tell you why you should trust them. They'll also tell you, right, why it is that they do what they do and how it is that you hold them accountable.
Very interesting. So my last question, and we're just about out of time. How do you know, and it's a companion to the previous question, how do you know that your advisor is doing a great job?
You know your advisor is doing a great job because you can't stop raving about them. That is the truth. If you wake up at night and you're worried, if you're constantly doubting whether you made the right choice,
mm-hmm.
then that probably isn't the advisor for you. Because a great financial advisor is the advisor who is the ideal match for you. And I think that the focus on hiring an advisor shouldn't be on do they get the best returns. It shouldn't be on do they have the coolest approach to investing or the most credentials. It's, is this the person who can help me achieve the outcome that I want, which in retirement, right, is probably going to be enjoy my retirement, do the things I love, not worry about running out of money, right? And you want somebody who can be a partner with you in that process and who will help you feel safe and secure. It's kind of like a marriage. And if you have doubts in your marriage and if you have, you know, if you don't feel safe and secure in your marriage, then it's, you know, it's not going to be a fun place to live. And you want the same thing with your financial advisor. You want to know that if you call them up at, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon crying, that they're going to be there for you. You want to know that no matter what happens, they're going to help you get through it.
Wow. Great advice. YieldsForYou.com. Great information there, Leibel.
Yep. YieldsForYou.com. Got resources, we've got guides, we've got books, we've got classes, we got everything that you need to really take this transition into and through retirement, and whether you decide to be your own financial advisor, or you decide that you want to hire someone, or you decide that you just want somebody to talk to and help through this process and bounce ideas off, we've got resources for the full spectrum.
All right. Thank you, Libel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Libel's website is libelonfire.com. That's libelonfire.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Certainly hope you're enjoying New Beginnings this week. If you've missed any portion of our show, you can download the podcast from our website, freddiebell.com. It happened this week. Albuquerque police say the murders of four Muslim men may have been motivated by an interpersonal conflict. Police also confirmed that Mohammed Syed had been arrested and is being charged with two of four homicides. Officers say detectives will continue working with the district attorney's office on potential charges for the other two, one of which happened last November. Former President Trump is indicating he will testify in the New York investigation into his family's business practices. New York attorney Letitia James is looking into whether or not the Trump Organization inflated real estate values. And speaking of the former president, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is calling for a thorough and immediate explanation from the Justice Department after the FBI executed a search warrant of former President Donald Trump's home in Florida. The search of Trump's residence at his Mar-a-Lago resort reportedly focused on classified material taken from the White House when Trump left office. We also saw that Missouri voters will decide this November whether to make recreational marijuana legal in the state. Missouri Secretary of State says enough signatures were collected to place a legalization question on the ballot in November. Missourians will vote on possibly changing the state's constitution to allow people over 21 to buy and sell marijuana. And speaking of selling, Elon Musk is selling billions of dollars worth of Tesla shares. The CEO is reportedly unloading 7.9 million shares of stock worth nearly $7 billion. Some are speculating that the sale is Musk trying to get ahead of a possible crash caused by higher than expected consumer price index. And Serena Williams is announcing her upcoming retirement from tennis. In a piece narrated by her that was published in Vogue, she says, "These days I have to choose between building my tennis resume and building my family. I choose the latter." In the piece, Williams admitted that she's been reluctant to say that she must step away from the game. She says it's like a taboo topic and she can't talk with her mom or dad about it. Williams says she doesn't like the word retirement but explains it this way, "I'm here to tell you that I'm evolving away from tennis." Meanwhile, Williams says she's not sure if she's ready to win the upcoming U.S. Open, but she'll try to do so. She explained that age and her past pregnancy played a role in her decision. It happened this week, and I'm Freddie Bell. Joining us now is Dr. Michael Osterholm. He is a special advisor to President Biden with regard to COVID-19. Welcome to the show. And we're seeing that the current strain of COVID BA5 is accounting for 85% of all COVID cases. Can you give me your assessment of where we stand right now in the United States?
Well, it is important to acknowledge, I think, one very important point, that we are in an unprecedented time in the pandemic in the United States. What I mean by that is we have gone from this surge and peak, big increase in cases, to this trough of low number of cases, or at least lower, and then another peak, almost like moguls on a ski slope. Now we've almost hit the Great Plains, and it's high, but it's just level. So let me just start by saying that things don't seem to be moving or changing significantly here in the U.S., but the virus is certainly not going away. Let me just come back, and for the eighth consecutive week, and I can't wait until I can change this conclusion, I know of more people with COVID this week, friends, colleagues, neighbors, than I have at any time in the pandemic for a one-week period. This past week was the first time in the entire pandemic, dating back to 2019, where I knew of four different people who died from COVID. Now, while the case numbers are not going off the roof, the number of deaths are not anywhere near what they once were, this virus is simply not done with us. So, in short, the numbers have plateaued at a relatively high level and remain constant over these multiple weeks, unlike any time in the pandemic in the United States. Activity seems to be distributed relatively equally across the entire country with no specific regional trends. We're not seeing specific states lighting up with COVID while other areas of the country are relatively quiet like we have in previous surges. Remember all of the experts who announced this past spring that we could expect to see another big burst of cases in the Sunbelt states of the United States as we'd seen the previous 2 years? My comments at that time were that a broken clock is right twice a day. I don't know why we should expect that we would see another summer surge. We haven't. So what we're really seeing right now is an unprecedented leveling of cases in a way that makes it uneasy for all of us. In some ways, I think we adjust our risk at the time when a big peak of cases occurs easier than we do if we have this steady plateau. As you mentioned, the 7-day average reported cases have been fluctuating between 120 and 130,000 cases for the past several weeks. At the risk of sounding like a broken record, we know that. In reality, true case numbers are much, much higher than what is being reported. I just indicated my own personal experience. Anecdotal information, which some people call data, I don't, but still nonetheless important. But there are other signs of cases plateauing, including wastewater data, which has shown a small decline in the presence of COVID-19 across the country over the past week. But let me emphasize, a very small decline in the U.S. While daily deaths and hospitalizations are increasing, the increases are relatively minimal. Over the past 2 weeks, the average hospitalized in a given day has increased 5%, now at 43,500, and the average daily deaths have increased 4%, now almost 450 lives lost each day. Let me just come back and focus on that. I think that in this time of a steady state plateau-like activity, people are kind of saying it's done with. But let's just add perspective. At 450 deaths a day, extrapolate that number to the number of deaths that might be expected annually, which takes it well over 160,000 deaths a year, which now places this illness as the number four cause of death in this country. Think of that. If 3 years ago I had said to you a virus would emerge that would get into some kind of almost steady state picture with us, and it would become the number four cause of death in this country, most people would have said, oh, what a crisis. Today, we hardly hear anybody talk about this anymore. I would also like to point out that the ICU numbers have increased 9% over the past 2 weeks, with an average of 5,000 people in ICUs for COVID on any one given day. We are yet stretching in many locations our healthcare resources. This means that 12% of the hospitalized COVID-19 patients are currently in an ICU, a number that has remained at about 11% since May 3rd until Friday, July 24th. So let's not forget that everything I just talked about are not just numbers. They're absolutely not numbers that we should somehow feel comfortable with. As I just said, at the current rate, COVID is the fourth leading cause of death in this country, only behind heart disease, cancer, and accidents. So while 450 daily deaths may seem like a fraction of what we've seen in the past, we cannot let ourselves become acclimated to this. All of this is to say that the current situation in the U.S. is that things are just not moving. COVID-19 is everywhere, and it's not going anywhere. We need to continue to have humility and remain vigilant, always remembering how we can reduce our own risk. And finally, let me just say that these times provide a real challenge personally for each and every one of us as to what does this mean for my own protection? What do I do to reduce my risk? Or do I just assume I'm going to get it? I have heard more people over the course of the past several weeks just say, oh, I'm just going to get this. I'm sure I am. And unfortunately, we continue to see long COVID cases. We continue to see these people being hospitalized, severely ill, and as I pointed out, unfortunately, even people dying. So at this point, I'm not comfortable saying I'm just going to give in. At the same time, I know we all have to move on with our lives. And as I pointed out, I'm doing that. We now get together with friends, private in our own homes, where we ask that everyone make certain that they have not had contact with any known case in the 3 previous days before getting together. We all test at least once and sometimes twice before we get together on the day and the day before our evening dinner, and we recognize that this is not foolproof. We're not wearing respiratory protection, but it's our way of coming to grips with the risk of this virus. And so far, knock on wood, I'm doing okay.
Doctor, we're so glad to hear that. He's epidemiologist Michael Osterholm. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we look forward to further conversations as we continue to fight together to eradicate this virus. I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings.
You would do anything to protect the ones you love. Help make sure your child is protected from dangerous diseases by getting them vaccinated. Talk to your doctor or clinic today about the vaccines your child needs and the safety measures they have in place to protect your family during COVID-19. Go to health.mn.us/immunize for more. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
In our never-ending effort to find valuable information and insight in all areas, it's time to bring in Cassie Crandall with this week's Three Things.
Thank you, Freddie. And this is Cassie Crandall with Three Things. All right, my thing number one this week. I'm always looking for new and different things to do. I don't know about you, but I get bored being at home, and sometimes we get in the habit of always doing the same kinds of things, always doing the same, going to the same kinds of restaurants, etc. Anyway, I found this and I thought, oh, I'm going to check it out. Now, I haven't yet, but I want to tell you all about it. The True Confessions Gangster Walking Tour in St. Paul. It's held at the Celeste of St. Paul Hotel and Bar on Exchange Street. It's a gangster tour featuring the fascinating history of a time when America's Most Wanted lived and died on the streets of St. Paul. Notable sites include the Lowry Hotel, Mickey's Diner, the Hams Casino, Rice Park, Hotel St. Francis, and a lot more. The tour takes about 90 minutes. You'll walk about 1.3 miles, and the tour includes a select beverage afterwards in the hotel bar. Definitely something to check out. Hotel Celeste, 26 East Exchange Street, St. Paul. Okay, my thing number two this week. Good quote I found by John Dryden. We first make our habits, and then our habits make us. And last but not least, my thing number three. I've talked about it before, but it's getting closer, so I'm getting excited. The Great Minnesota Get-Together, August 25th to September 5th. That's right. It's the Minnesota State Fair. Something new this year, open captioning, audio description, and ASL at the fair. We've added open captioning and audio description to our accessible services this year for guests who are deaf or hard of hearing or blind or have low vision. And we continue to offer ASL, that's American Sign Language, interpretation at select entertainment and educational programs throughout the fair. Everybody can enjoy the fair, that's for sure. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall. We'll see you next week.
Thanks so much, Cassie. We'll talk to you again next week. Unity South Twin Cities is located at 7950 First Avenue South in Bloomington, with two services each Sunday at 9 and at 10:30 a.m. Senior Minister James Stacy is sharing a lesson today entitled Night and Day. We join in progress.
I took that title from our Unity co-founder, Myrtle Fillmore. So let's hear what she wrote a century ago about day and night consciousness. Day and night does not necessarily mean 24 hours of time. It has reference to the daytime of the soul when it has light and everything seems to be going smoothly and it can see evidence that the divine law is working. And then to the nighttime of the soul, when a person has gone as far as the light of his consciousness will take him in a given direction, and when he must then turn within and wait for more light, God's guidance. When nighttime comes to us, we should use it as a quiet time of great help. If we do, it will afford us time for meditation and the careful study of ourselves and our present methods. It will cause us to turn more to the universal law and its operation and less to our personal efforts and the ways of others. So what I wanted to draw out is this suggestion of Myrtle Fillmore's that there is a rhythmical component to our well-being. Just as our day is divided by daylight and nighttime, so we are at times awake and then asleep. In life, we may experience many seasons and many years, and at some point our earthly life does end. But I want you to think about all the rhythms, the alternations, the contrasts that you already experience in your life, but perhaps don't give it that much attention. Day and night. We're quite aware now of summer and winter, spring and fall. We are young and we are mature. We can be in a mood that is up, or we can be in a mood that's quiet, perhaps even down. We can be very engaged with another, or we can be very centered in ourself. We can be outwardly active or inwardly contemplative and thinking. In his brand new book, Michael Singer writes of a living untethered, that is essentially not living in a one-sided manner, but realizing our true self observes all these rhythms of life and contrasts in our experience, and the I am of us, the higher self, the Christ within, witnesses and can bring balance to all the alterations, not alterations, alternating states of awareness. And some even suggest that there is a rhythm or contrast to our spiritual practice. Richard Rohr, an author of The Universal Christ, which we have studied, it's been very popular in recent years, and he's been invited to speak for the past several years at the Chautauqua Institution. But he turns to the well-known philosopher and writer Ken Wilber, who says almost all religions throughout the world, throughout time, can be described as ascending or climbing, giving us an upward direction, giving us absolutes, a oneness, a unity, theologies of belief. Or religions can be descenders, pointing us downward to the many, the momentary, that the divine is incarnated in us.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
Thank you for being with us this weekend on New Beginnings. Have you downloaded our podcast yet? You can get it automatically. All you have to do is register, and you can find our show wherever you download and get your podcast today. Today is National S'mores Day. Yes, s'mores is recognized as the most popular campfire treat in the world. Millions of people of all ages love this gooey, toasted treat. S'mores consist of a roasted marshmallow with a layer of chocolate bar sandwiched between two pieces of graham cracker. The origin of this tasty snack is credited to the entrepreneur Alec Barnum. However, the first recorded version of the recipe can be found in the 1927 publication of Tramping and Trailing with the Girl Scouts. Even though the Girl Scouts were not the first one to make s'mores, Girl Scout groups describe them in their reports as early as 1925. Early recipes used the name s'mores. It's unclear when the word s'mores became the more common name. And here are today's words to the wise. Miracles happen when you least expect them. Today's words to the wise. Miracles happen when you least expect them. You can find more in my book, Words to the Wise, available wherever books are sold. Well, our show has come and gone too quickly this weekend. Special thanks to Kathy McClear from AARP Minnesota, Cassie Crandall, also Libel Sternbach and Joe McKenzie, and most of all, you. We appreciate you listening. And if you like more information about any of the program that you heard, you can find us on freddiebell.com. Click the link for radio shows and you'll see New Beginnings, and you can download the podcast right there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend. And for everyone who's been a part of this one, I'm Freddie Bell, reminding you that every day is a wonderful chance for a new beginning. We'll see you next week.